This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Greetings from Boca Raton, Florida, and welcome to the Creating Wealth Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, episode number 605. Yes, I am traveling again today. Imagine that. I'm attending Tony Robbins' Date with Destiny event, and I want to give a shout out to two of our wonderful clients. One is Elizabeth for introducing me to Deborah, and Deborah is very involved with the Tony Robbins organization, and she got me a room here in the Boca Raton Resort, which was sold out. You know, it's funny how hotels always seem to have another room. Is a hotel ever really sold out? I sure know airplanes are. Those are full. They'd pack people in the aisleways and the bathrooms if they were allowed to on those planes. It's ridiculous. It's a sardine can, you know that. Anyway, hey, let's talk about some good economic and investing stuff today. Our guest will be Josh Crum, and he is going to talk about inflation, deflation, stagnation, Bitcoin, Bitgold, and gold as the yardstick for all of these things. And I got to tell you, of course, we all know that the gold bugs have been so wrong. My God, they've been so wrong. Yeah, and doesn't this just go to show you how in life you can have a very correct premise and still reach an incredibly wrong conclusion? Now, granted, to be fair, maybe they won't be wrong forever. Maybe at some point in the future, gold will surge and it will be $5,000 per ounce, like Peter Schiff predicted it would be at the end of Obama's first term. That didn't come true at all, did it? It was the complete opposite. It was a disaster because, you know, people don't look at the whole picture. You know, doing the math does not answer every question. It definitely does not answer every question. There's a lot more to it than math. There are geopolitical considerations and all sorts of other things. So we know we've talked about that many times before. We don't need to dive into it today. And today, you'll be glad to know I'm not going to play you any poor sound quality Voxer messages. But we are going to fix that because I think that's a valuable tool. And I'd love your feedback on it, by the way. And I'd love you to contact me on Voxer so that I can answer your questions on the show. Just download the free Voxer app, V-O-X-E-R, in your app store for your very smartphone. And then look me up, Jason Hartman or jhart88. Love to take your questions on the show through Voxer because we can have a dialogue. You know, isn't it interesting how there are two medias in the world? Years ago, this was probably 11 years ago now, I remember writing an article for a magazine on what I call, and I totally made this up myself, you know, I just dubbed it the monologue media and the dialogue media. Now, the monologue media, that's the old media, you know, that's the media controlled by the book publishing industry, the movie industry, the TV industry, the newspaper industry. You know, this is a one-way thing. They get to produce a message and send it out to the masses. And they are controlled largely by the political left. Then you have the dialogue media, and that really became very big with talk radio. And who was the guy that sort of reinvented talk radio? Hey, love him or hate him, but you got to give him credit in the radio business because that medium wasn't doing well until Mr. Rush Limbaugh, who lives right near me, I think, in Florida here, right near where I'm visiting. I don't live here, obviously. He really reinvented that. And the dialogue media is where, you know, on talk radio, people call in and they argue with the host and they have dissenting viewpoints. And for that medium to survive, it also includes, of course, the newer media, the blogosphere, you know, blogs and even podcasts. And so what I'm saying is have a dialogue with me on the air. And the great thing about podcasting is it's asynchronous, right? So I can produce the message when it's convenient for me to produce, and you can listen when it's convenient for you. That is a true win-win, not to mention that it's free, and not to mention that you don't have to listen to 22 minutes of commercials for every hour of content. Another beautiful thing for the listener. It's a dialogue media. So Voxer is another tool that goes in this direction. And if you look at it, just a slight little political comment, don't hate me. I know a lot of you listen and disagree with my politics, and a lot of you agree with them. But even the ones who disagree, I appreciate and love you, and appreciate you listening to the show. So I just want to say one thing about that. I believe that the dialogue media is controlled by the right, or not even the right, but the libertarian. See, I don't consider myself a righty in the political world or or really a conservative that much anymore. I kind of used to be more of one, but they've alienated me a bit in more recent years with some of their, you know, sort of old-fashioned belief systems. But, you know, whatever. I think a lot of those systems should be respected, not hated, but, you know, just for me, I believe in freedom. I think people ought to be free to pretty much do what they want. And so I'm a libertarian. You know, I think small government is a good government. We need government, but let's keep it under control, keep it small, because it just ends up invading us. But if you look at the one appearance on the dialogue media, the one appearance from the left, what was it? Do you remember? Well, I'm pretty sure, I'll say that much. I'm 95% sure that they went bankrupt, and I don't know if they ever reemerged. I don't think so, because I certainly haven't heard about them. Do you know what I'm talking about? Who is it? It's Air America. Yeah, they were all over, syndicated all over AM talk radio for a while, and they were the one voice on that medium of the left, of the political left, and they didn't make it. So my theory about this is that if you have an idea that will withstand debate and dissent, like I hope my ideas do about investing and so forth on the show, you know, you'll do well in the dialogue media. But if you don't, you won't do well in the dialogue media, and you'll be stuck in the monologue media, the old media, where it's a one-way conversation. Well, I can't even say it's a conversation. It's a monologue. A conversation implies that it's a two-way thing, right? So a little interesting tidbit there for you. Now, last week, I spoke at a real estate conference about rental housing. It's called the IMN Conference. And a few of you asked for a recording of my talk, which I don't have yet, but they're supposed to provide it. Maybe I'll put it on the podcast. And many of you asked for my slides. So guess what? You can have the slides. Just go to, it's super easy, just go to jasonhartman.com/IMN. Let me see, what would be the whiskey, tango, foxtrot, you know, those like pilots talk. And, you know, I do have 33 hours toward my pilot's license. I can fly a plane. Well, I know enough to be dangerous, but I have flown a plane several times. But IMN, that would be India. Yes, it would be India. India, Mary, Nancy. I don't know. Those other two, I think, are wrong. But India, Mary, Nancy, IMN. jasonhartman.com/IMN. You can get the slides for free there. And we're going to be doing a lot more of this, by the way. A lot more material that we provide to you, all free of charge, no charge for this stuff. And those slides that I mentioned several episodes ago when we talked about how various investment classes act in different economic environments and why that's important, I'm going to also create a page where you can go and download those slides as well. Anyway, those will be there for you. I noticed that the IMN link was not immediately working when I tested it today, but I think by the time you listen to it, it will work. So jasonhartman.com/IMN. Get those slides from my talk. I think you'll find those to be valuable. Meet the Masters of Income Property is coming up. It's just about sold out. I honestly haven't checked, but we are going to cap it. We don't want to be overcrowded. It always seems like we are at these events. So you got to get your tickets like literally right now, okay, if you want to go, because it is just about sold out. There were 8 tickets available last time I looked, literally 8 tickets. Before we get to our guest, a quick thing on Tony Robbins. I want to remind you, you know, it's great to be exposed to this kind of stuff. I discovered him so long ago when he was very early in his career, and I remember the first time I met Tony Robbins and shook his hand. I mean, his hand was ginormous, huge. The guy is like 6'8". He's a big person, and but he's got some big ideas, and they're really good. You know, he talks about this target, the forces that drive every human being, the 6 human needs. And I know when I was at his Unleash the Power Within weekend a couple of months ago, I believe I talked about this a little bit, but I'll just give you a quick reminder because I'm at the Date with Destiny conference today, and again, they're coming up. So the first one is the need for certainty. We like certainty. And then some of us, and you know, these needs, we all have all of these needs, but it depends how we order them as to what's most important and least important to us. And the next one is the need for variety. So those are contrary needs, right? You can't have certainty and variety at the same time. That's a paradoxical situation. So the next one, significance. And then the one after that, connection and love. And Tony says that's a paradox too, because if we are constantly seeking significance, then that's about us, right? It's about our being and what we're contributing and what we're doing in the world and maybe the type of recognition we're getting in the world. But the next need is connection and love. And he says those two are paradoxical as well, because connection and love means we're focusing more on the other person, and significance means we're focusing more on ourselves. Now, admittedly, of course, significance, if we're going to be, certainly people like, look at Mother Teresa, right? The late Mother Teresa. She was very significant, and she had a lot of significance, but she was outwardly focused in her significance. Tony didn't give that example. I just thought of that myself, so I hope that makes sense. But there are multiple ways to gain that significance, obviously, okay? And then growth and contribution. Those are the 6, okay? He defines the last two as the needs of the spirit, growth and contribution. And one thing he said interesting today that I hadn't heard before, I hadn't heard him say this before, is he says, progress equals happiness. Progress equals happiness. So even if we don't get what we want, as long as we're moving in the direction of what we want, that will provide us with happiness. In fact, we all know a lot of times we get what we want and it doesn't make us happy. Maybe temporarily it does. Certainly, you know, we get that new car, that new home, that new relationship. You know, it's great in the beginning, but then we start to take it for granted and it becomes old and, you know, it's just the way we are. You know, it's the way we're all wired. This is not any one person is that way. We're all this way. One of the great things about understanding the human animal is that we're all basically wired the same way. That's just interesting. You know, it's the same basic wiring. Of course, we prioritize things differently, but we all have these same basic ideas and needs and so forth. And so I'll share with you a couple of the questions he asked us to write out the answers to this morning. The first one was, why did you come here? Why did you attend? And so, you know, maybe if you haven't been to this event or you haven't been to any of these types of events, why would you go? What would be the reason? You know, would it be growth? Would it be social experiences, motivation, taking things to the next level, fulfillment, whatever it is, right? Well, those were some of mine. Okay. I'm just reading what I wrote. And then number two, what would an extraordinary quality of life look like for you? And one of the things I think is a great exercise, and I remember doing this many, many years ago. I can't remember who even gave me the idea. It might have been Tony Robbins. It might have been Earl Nightingale, Jim Rohn. I am not even sure. And he didn't have us do this today, but I just think it really aligns with what he was talking about, is design your perfect day. Write it out. What is your perfect day? What do you do first thing when you get up? How do you feel? What do you do? And what do you do throughout that day? I think that's a great idea. Design your perfect day, okay? And describe what your environment is like during that day and what your thoughts are like and who you're meeting and who you're hanging out with and all that kind of stuff. And then the third and final question before we talk about how progress equals happiness, what's prevented you in the past? What belief system has prevented you from getting there? Okay. And what I wrote down is an improper focus, not focusing on the right things, and then allowing myself to be distracted by things that don't get to that question number two, that extraordinary quality of life. I can't wait to dive in. We've got 6 days of this. And if you know Tony, they are long days. They're like 10 hours, maybe 12 hours long. It's crazy. We've got a lot more of it. So I will share with you some more next week after the whole event is done. Let's go ahead and get to our guest, Josh Crum. Let's talk about inflation, deflation, and stagnation. We've got some awesome shows coming up, some awesome events coming up. Of course, jasonhartman.com. Click on events to register for the upcoming Meet the Masters. Just a few tickets left. Literally, it's almost over. We cannot get a bigger room. Unfortunately, we are capped at this event. There's no bigger room available. So when it's done, it's done. And also the Venture Alliance Mastermind trip, our phenomenal trip coming up to Dubai. We've got some great speakers. One that we're working on that I so wish I could announce, but I just don't want to say it unless we actually get them confirmed. Go to VentureAllianceMastermind.com to check that out. That's VentureAllianceMastermind.com. And let's dive in and talk to our guest, Josh Crum. It's my pleasure to welcome Josh Crum to the show. He is co-founder and chief strategy officer of BitGold. He also has a background as, I believe he'll probably correct me on the title, as a precious metal strategist for Goldman Sachs. And it's a pleasure to have him here today coming from Vancouver, Canada. Beautiful place. Josh, welcome. How are you?
Hi, Jason. Good. Thank you. Thanks for having me. I think your timing was, I know we scheduled this about a month or so ago. So I think you had very prescient timing, given everything that's happening in gold and money.
We'll talk about that. Correct your resume for me. Goldman Sachs. Tell us about your background real quick.
Yeah, that's correct. I was an economist and head of metal strategy for Goldman Sachs in the global economics and macroeconomics strategy division out of London. So I worked with, well-known economists like Jim O'Neill, creator of the BRICS term, and Jeff Curry, who's been very, very prescient in many commodity calls.
Excellent. Fantastic. What do you see going on right now in the metals markets, which are a great yardstick for, what's going on in the overall economy? I mean, gold has really done nothing in years. I'm honestly not a gold bug. I'm not really a fan of the metals much at all, although I own some. I think as an insurance policy, yeah, they're fine, but I just don't think people should really treat them as investments. Feel free to argue with me and debate with me on that. That makes the show more interesting.
if gold
produced income, I would like it. And if it had tax advantages, I would like it even more. But, what do you see going on out there? I mean, And, you know, I'll just maybe give you a little more ammunition here. You know, with this massive amount of money creation that we've had under Obamianism, everybody's wondering, why don't we have more inflation? I mean, inflation's been really tame. Of course, the government's always understating the numbers. So if they tell you 2%, it's probably 4%. You know, it's still relatively low either way. What are your thoughts?
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, no, I think there's a lot to work with there. You know, first off, I agree with one comment you made that gold really isn't an investment. And I think it's actually, you know, starting with that point, it's very important to kind of work backwards. That's where I totally agree. Gold is not something that creates income and creates, you know, additional return and prosperity. What it is it's a savings asset. It's something that retains value and it holds value. And that's happened, you know, for thousands of years. But even if you look at, you know, at recently, you know, even over the last 10 years, there's actually not a bank account, you know, that exists where you could have just put, you know, savings without doing anything, without investing, just put it in a bank, let it earn interest. And, you know, what do you have in 10 years? Gold is actually...
You have less.
Exactly.
because inflation and taxes are destroying your wealth.
That's exactly it. And
no one except a fool.
So gold over time is not an investment. It's not about, you know, picking stocks like, you know, competing with Apple or you know, Google. What it is it's something, you know, very low risk that you can just buy, hold, and it'll maintain its value over time. And that's what gold's role has always been. It's not to make you rich. It's protect you from being poor through inflation.
Okay, so certainly, you know, you can say that. And, you know, I've heard all the arguments and believed many of them myself, actually. That's why I own a little bit of these metals, all the metals, basically. But look, I mean, 5,000 years ago, you could buy a toga and a pair of sandals with an ounce of gold. Now you can buy a man's suit and a pair of shoes. We all know that, and that's good. But, you know, if you bought gold at, what, $1,800, $1,900 an ounce, and now you're having to sell it for $1,200 or whatever the current price is, I don't know. Is it really a store of value?
So that's exactly the, you know, the problem that we often get trapped into thinking. You don't build savings all at one time. I'm going to rotate all of my savings into something at once. It's something you accumulate over time. So it just depends on when you pick your starting point. If you pick your starting point at 1800, sure. But let's just go back 3 years before that and, you know, pick the starting point at 700. So that's really the point, is if you VWAP, or, you know, you average into gold, you know, saving a dollar a day or $40 a month, that's where gold unequivocally outperforms any bank account that's ever existed. And so it's just another savings medium. But there's, you know, and then I'll get back to your other question about inflation. And this is the most important part. You know, you mentioned a toga and a suit. You know, that's all fine. We think about consumer goods. But the far more important thing is gold holds its energy store value over time. It's if you measured it against a basket of food or energy or utility bills, you know, measure that over 10 years, 20 years, 1,000 years, irrelevant of currency, gold holds its commodity value. And so that's very important.
And does it just hold it? Is it, Josh, in your eyes, is it just holding? Is it even, or is it actually improving? You're not improving, but you're holding your own. You're treading water, which is better than you're going to do in a bank account. We know that,
exactly.
Right?
And that's exactly what it's supposed to be. And I also argue that it depends on really what is your cost of living. If your cost of living is, you know, 30% commodities, you know, your utility bills, your gasoline bills, your food bills, which is, even in the Western world, it's probably 30% or more is directly related to energy or commodities. So in that case, you should be trying to hold somewhere around, you know, as much as 30%. You know, for those that are far more well off, that level can be much, much lower as a proportion of their income. But that's the important metric that I always use. And it doesn't appreciate. You mine gold from the earth with the same amounts of energies and with the same cost structure as you pull anything else out of the earth. So that's really where it gets its mathematical equivalence. It's not growing. It's just holding its value.
Okay. All right. Well, let's settle for that. That's not bad. I mean, it's certainly better than just a good old savings account. How does it compare to Wall Street? I mean, you're a Wall Street guy. I like to tease Wall Street and give them a hard time and call them the modern version of organized crime. You might agree with that. Most Wall Street people do, even if they're part of it.
I'll still be a little bit careful because of my background, but I'd say directionally I do agree with that. But I don't think I don't necessarily believe its intent. At least the economists that I worked with at Goldman actually were very good people and really, you know, believed in the work they were doing. But it's really more the system is designed. You know, we have a policy that, and again, I'm not even want to debate it. I just want to say what it is. We have a policy that's trying to design maximum growth and you know, increase aggregate demand by every dollar of wage out of your labor. They want it to depreciate it as fast as possible. So you're incentivized to maximize growth by spending it. You know, so we're on this treadmill all the time where we can't just, you know, spend our time working, be productive, and then save that until when we need it. We're forced onto this treadmill to always be, you know, investing more or spending more. And that is the problem is, you know, that's why all of Wall Street exists, because they're the ones constantly creating new products, you know, so you can keep up with this hamster wheel of just maintaining your value. Does that make some sense?
Yeah. Okay. So where are we going? You know, it's interesting to hear your perspective, and I like your balance. You seem to have a very balanced view of this. I'm glad you didn't come on and tell me silver is going to $75 an ounce and, you know, gold is going to be 5,000. It's interesting that Peter Schiff, who's been on the show, in 2007, he predicted, or in 2008, maybe, I think it was then President Obama, not candidate Obama. He said that gold would be $5,000 an ounce by the end of Obama's first term, and the complete opposite happened. So I like that. You know, you seem to have a reasonable view of that. But where are we going? I mean, look, we've got all this money sloshing around, or I shouldn't call it money. I should call it currency, which you'd agree with me. It's not certainly not money. Yeah.
Exactly. No, I appreciate the differentiation. That's important for us too. I completely agree. That's the important part. Currency is just this, you know, this Ferris wheel that you have to get in and off between the things you actually need or want, correct? So the reason I say things with all that sort of balance, I can't predict what currency is going to do. Currency is the system that's floating systems of debt and speculation and, you know, trust and confidence. Gold is just this piece of metal that has an energy cost that is equivalent to other things you need. So what I can say unequivocally is in 10 years, 15 years, your amount of gold, you know, purchasing your gasoline or your food bills will be relatively flat. I have no idea what happens to the price of gold measured in a floating currency between now and then. But that's the first part that's quite important. So addressing, you know, the comments from Peter Schiff, I don't want to live in a world that gold goes to 10,000, because that means that my food costs went up 10x as well. And my wages probably didn't match that, just given the nature of the system. So again, for me, it's all really about math and these fundamentals of, you know, physics and economics. It's not about, you know, scaring people or trying to push them into, you know, a certain ideology.
Okay, so where are we going? Tell us more about where we're going. Because, you know, I've been buying real estate with a, you know, a philosophy that inflation just has to come. And one of the core things I love, you know, with income property, you're going to hit a home run in an inflationary environment. That's pretty obvious. You're going to do okay in a deflationary or stagnationary environment, because in those environments, you're just looking for yield. And if you can get the yield from the cash flow, regardless of what the capital price of the investment does, you know, you're okay. It's not a home run, though. But in an inflationary environment, especially because of what I call inflation-induced debt destruction, where not only does the price, you know, which is, we can argue real and nominal dollars for sure, Josh, all day, which would be valid, but not only does the price of the asset increase, the price of the commodity, but the debt is debased by inflation. And that is the hidden wealth creator. That's the home run. That's just beautiful.
Yeah, and look, you've got a almost 40-year track record of, you know, constantly increasing debt to show that yes, you know, a leveraged asset like real estate, particularly if the income can keep up with paying the service on the debt, that it will appreciate faster than, you know, an asset without leverage. So, you know, I don't think there's anything fundamentally wrong with your rationale. I guess I just, you know, it really depends on, you know, one, the time frame, and also the nature of your audience. You know, us millennials, and I am right on that borderline, but my, you know, business partner and all my employees and team, you know, are all, you know, millennials. We don't really have that. Like, you know, we don't have, you know, between student loans and everything else, how do you actually get into that system where you can have that first property to leverage into the next one? And that's the problem is, you know, for someone that just wants to keep up, you know, buying $10 of gold worth at a time on BitGold is much easier than, you know, saving a depreciating dollar to get that first mortgage or that first down payment, right?
Oh yeah, because it's far more divisible. So that's great. Okay. So just let me ask you the question. Let's hear about BitGold. But
sorry, I don't think I've answered your question on inflation.
Yeah. What's coming? Are we going into an inflationary environment, a deflationary environment, just general stagnation, or God forbid, stagflation, which is really ugly?
So there's two pieces to the trends that are very, very important, and they're actually somewhat independent. What's happening in monetary policy is really driven by wage inflation. And then that's something we really haven't had in, you know, probably 20 or 30 years, you know, real wage inflation. The second part of it is commodity price inflation, which is very much driven by technology and what's happening in energy and resources, which is global in nature and not specific to any country. So, you know, whether it's the price of gold or just generally prices stabilizing over the last few years, you know, like grocery bills, most of that has been because of technology. Nothing that the Fed is doing. It's the shale oil boom has really changed the game globally in energy. So that's a positive tailwind for people and consumers. However, what the Fed is doing and has stated very, very strongly in this, you know, over the last, you know, the last month or so, is that they're going to wait till they see any real sign of wage inflation until they raise rates. So basically, they're not going to be preemptive; they're going to be reactive. So in my mind, you know, I think the energy deflation has played out. Short term oil prices might keep falling, but the real, you know, anchor point, the cost of producing new oil, is going to start flattening out, and we will start seeing inflation, because that's their, you know, they're telling us they want inflation, and we will see it. They won't fail at that.
Right. Yeah, they can create inflation if they want to. There's just, I mean, I have never understood the argument from the deflationists that say, well, they just can't create enough money to reverse these. Of course they can. The amount they can create is unlimited.
And it's ridiculous. And so, you know, their basket, and I don't want to get too far into the CPI basket issues, but you know, let me ask you this. Anything that matters, healthcare, education, food prices, are any of these going down? this argument, and it's almost 99% accepted that we have no inflation, except if you look talking about a micro industry that matters.
and when you say no, you mean very low, right? You mean within,
yeah,
like the 2%
exactly.
Target, right? So you don't really mean no inflation. That's a figure of speech.
Yeah. Exactly. Everything I've been talking about, we're talking about 5 to 10% compound inflation. Over, you know, long cycles. This isn't anything that's short term. I mean, education prices or healthcare prices, these aren't going up by 1 or 2% a year. And so that's the importance of having a savings medium where you can actually hold your wages. And you know, my co-founder's a former portfolio manager, and he made a very interesting point. In today's environment, you know, just to keep up with the you know, since gold was demonetized in the 70s, protein prices, meat protein prices, have compounded by 5 to 6% a year over, you know, decades. So in this environment, you've got to be Warren Buffett just to keep up with the price of food. You know, that's how out of whack our financial system is. You know, forget the, you know, 0.25% you get at your bank. You now have to get the returns of Warren Buffett to keep up with food prices.
Yeah, that's really interesting and sad too. Definitely. Okay, so would it be fair to say that your basic prediction is that inflation is coming, or no, or is that not right?
I believe so. Yeah. I mean, I think inflation has always been here, and it's going to increase. I mean, you had QE1, and then you had QE2, and you had at some point, just like the European Central Bank, they're going to do whatever it takes to create inflation. You know, they're pushing so far into their theoretical toolbox that they will make something happen.
And the government has a real, very legitimate incentive to have inflation. I mean, there's not only the Phillips curve argument, but there's also just the fact that they get to debase their own debt to foreign countries, and it's a great deal for the government. It's an awesome deal.
Yeah, but I we started this business on the mathematical properties of gold for savings, and I actually am probably more left when it comes to those things. I don't think there's any grand conspiracy. I think they've been very, very fooled by the academic central planners, that this is somehow good for everybody. And so I don't think there's any, government reason why they're trying to, deflate their debt. I think they honestly are trying to get wage growth. But the fact that they can't get wage growth means that they have to, create social programs to, a social safety net, which is getting more and more expensive. So I don't see it as any grand conspiracy. I just think it's, a flawed policy that, we need to have a more open debate and not an absolute monopoly on academic thought when it comes to economics.
Yeah, right. And that's, of course, one man's opinion. Nobody knows if it's a conspiracy or not, except the conspirators, if they exist.
Having worked at Goldman Sachs, I heard my fair share of conspiracies that I sat in the room, and I can honestly say that we were just trying to figure it out just as much as the next guy.
Right. Yeah, very interesting. Well, good. Okay, so tell us about BitGold. What is it, and what does it do, and why is it important?
No, I appreciate it. We've spent a lot of time on the macro, and it's for all the reasons I just said, because we believe in this so passionately. We just wanted to make it as easy as possible for anyone around the world to buy gold, buy it, a dollar at a time, right from their mobile phone while they're standing in line for, a coffee, and not have to think twice about it. So just like any other great technology, we're democratizing access, lowering friction, offering a better user experience, all of the things that the technology is doing. And so we just want to, if you will, disrupt the consumer gold market in a way that we don't have to, you don't have to go to a coin dealer and pay 5 or 6%, to buy gold, and you have to buy it at a minimum of, $1,000 at a time. Now you can buy it a minute at a time, over a cell phone. And that's really what BitGold's all about, is just making it easy.
Okay. So it's basically a way to buy gold. Now, where is this gold stored, and how do people get access to it?
Yeah, so that's what we really thought long and hard about, is what's the best way to manage this so there's, so it lowers the risk. And we are publicly traded, so that for us, that's also a way to increase transparency and trust in our business. You get to choose. We've got, I think, 7 vaults open. Brinks vaults, Brinks manages the gold, and it's insured by Lloyd's of London. But you can store your gold in Toronto, New York, Hong Kong, Singapore, Dubai, Zurich, and we're going to, open more vaults to come. But it's essentially an online bank account or even PayPal account, and I'll get into the payments piece in a second. But it's a way for you to own gold just like you don't have a savings account or bank account, but also be able to use it, spend it, and have a debit card with it and that sort of thing. So it's really a gold-backed bank account.
Okay, so then people would never actually access real gold, right? They would only trade in the symbol of the gold, which is the stuff attached to the account, like the ability to buy and sell like PayPal, they don't actually ever see any gold, or do they if they want to?
Well, they do. Yeah, we actually mint 10 gram cubes. So that's much less than, it's about a third of an ounce, or, $300-$400. And, because it's like a bank account with your address information, you press a couple buttons and we actually ship your gold right to your house. So it's fully redeemable. It's, the ethos of the business is fully redeemable, fully allocated. We're not relending it.
Oh, that's really interesting. So they can be just basically buying the gold through you. And then at some point when they've got a third of an ounce, they can say, well, ship me that third of an ounce. And they can stick it in their safe.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
But how can you do that? Because they must have to pay some handling fees or, premium above spot price or, and what do you do? Like, how do you dollar cost average in? I mean, that's got to be just incredibly complicated,
So all of our business was designed, and it is complicated. We built a lot of partnerships. But we didn't want to reinvent the wheel. Like all of these, great technology companies, we just want to be the software that aligns and makes everything efficient in between services that already exist. Brinks is already out there. The big bullion banks are all already buying and selling gold in a large, deep, liquid market. So what we did is, we actually make it very, very simple. Don't have to think about it. 1% to get in, 1% to get out. That's it. You can buy gold for 1%. You can redeem gold for 1%. And we're getting, wholesale or spot prices from the big bullion banks. And as far as shipping, we're just passing through the, Brinks ships metals and insecure goods and all that. So there is a fee, and there is a physical cost for shipping, but our company's not capturing any of that. We want to lower the friction and lower the costs as much as possible. So it's just very simple to think about: 1% in, 1% out. That's it.
Okay. And then pay Brinks to bring it to your door. What happens? A Brinks truck shows up at your door?
Yeah, it's $25 and there may be a variable shipping rate. And it just shows up.
Yeah. That's interesting. Maybe tell me about this. I mean, I've purchased metals, from places. They just send them U.S. mail. I can't believe it. It blows my mind.
Yeah, and actually, it brings up a good point about the real value of gold. And if you think about it, shipping an iPhone is, $700 too. So it's really no different. but people, intuitively know that gold is permanent and something beyond the value of an iPhone, even though they're nominally the same price. But insured shipments, no matter what it is an insured shipment. So, you just have to pay the cost for those logistics.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, what else should people know?
Yes, so after, after the first part, the savings part, the second piece is being able to access and spend your gold. And so that's where we issue a MasterCard prepaid card, where you're actually able to load, load from your gold account and spend at traditional points of sale or online, anywhere that MasterCard is accepted. So this is the first time, you've been able to actually spend gold from a gold savings account. And in the future, we're actually working on partnerships to make it more like a PayPal, where merchants will actually start accepting gold directly. And the main advantage of that is, if you think about overseas markets, is there's so much friction going, typically the consumer pays 2.5% or more in an exchange rate, even going, say, across Canada, buying something in Canada. And then also on the merchant side, they're paying 2-3% to process a cross-border transaction. However, if you're just sending the value of gold that's not moving, it's just sitting there in a Brinks vault, but if you're sending the value, the title of that gold back and forth across the border, it's much, much cheaper. And so in the future, we will start getting into things like remittance markets and sending money around the world by using your gold account. So step one that's available now is really the gold savings account and the gold MasterCard. But step two is building out a global merchant network where you can start using gold like you use your PayPal account.
Yeah, very interesting. So, the gold bugs, and I know you're not a gold bug, and I appreciate that, or maybe you're not. they always say, well, the dollar and every currency on earth is fiat currency. Fiat, of course, means by authority or by decree. And, you know, it has nothing real backing it. It's just a symbol. It's fiat money. Well, things like Bitgold, isn't that just fiat money too? I mean, you know, it's a symbol of something that a company says is there. Nobody really knows until they have it shipped to them. You know, a lot of people have stated that they think COMEX is a Ponzi scheme. You know, how do they know what's going on with Bitgold?
Yeah, so the important thing is, you know, let's compare the risks and compare those trust issues. The banks tell you that they're lending out, you know, 90% of your money. So you already know it's not there. And I don't want to get into all of that, but...
And that's through fractional reserve banking, okay? So, yeah.
Exactly. So our ledger, though, what we can assure is, you know, we're a publicly traded company with quarterly financials, quarterly audits, all of the systems and controls. You know, every quarter we're, you know, our gold balances, and this is not in our company accounts, but this is segregated accounts, you know, for on behalf of the customer. You know, our whole legal framework is called bailment law, where it's always your gold, it's always your title. We just manage the instructions with that gold. So every time you buy gold on our platform, it has to physically exist, and it doesn't actually confirm until Brinks says that gold is sitting in our cage and allocated to you. So there's checks and balances all the way through the system, and, you know, and our whole legal structure is designed that way, so to assure that you always have physical, you know, backed gold in your account.
Is there anything I didn't ask you, Josh, that you should just talk about, you know, maybe something I just didn't think of? What do you want our listeners to know other than what you've said?
No, I think just some of the growth metrics of the company. I mean, we only launched about 4.5 months ago. We've already signed up over 350,000 people, you know, making us one of the fastest growing, you know, fintech or financial technology companies out there. And, you know, this message is really resonating with people that, you know, this is not about being a gold bug. This is about, you know, just having a stable bank account that's got thousands of years of math behind it, where it's never not held, you know, the value of commodities. And so you know, I think you know, the easiest thing to do is to, you know, open an account and try it. It's free. There's no obligations. You just, you know, you sign up, and we've designed it very much like the tech companies, where it's easy to sign up, very, very smooth user experience, and you know, just you know, give it a try and watch, you know, watch how gold holds value over time.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, hey, Josh, thank you so much for joining us today. And is the website just bitgold.com?
That's correct, bitgold.com. And the public company is actually called Gold Money. You know, for us, it's really...
Oh, it's James Turk's company.
Exactly. We actually, after Roy and I founded BitGold, very shortly after, actually, you know, we ended up acquiring James Turk's company. So the parent company is now called BitGold, but it's managed by Roy and I, and James is still on the board.
Okay, and who's Roy?
Roy is my co-founder and the CEO of Gold Money.
Good stuff. Well, Josh Crum, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
I've never really thought of Jason as subversive, but I just found out that's what Wall Street considers him to be.
Really? Now, how is that possible at all?
Simple. Wall Street believes that real estate investors are dangerous to their schemes because the dirty truth about income property is that it actually works in real life.
I know. I mean, how many people do you know, not including insiders, who created wealth with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? Those options are for people who only want to pretend they're getting ahead.
Stocks and other non-direct traded assets are a losing game for most people. The typical scenario is you make a little, you lose a little, and spin your wheels for decades.
That's because the corporate crooks running the stock and bond investing game will always see to it that they win. This means, unless you're one of them, you will not win.
And unluckily for Wall Street, Jason has a unique ability to make the everyday person understand investing the way it should be. He shows them a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Yep, and that's why Jason offers a one-book set on creating wealth that comes with 20 digital download audios. He shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches you how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And this set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered for only $197.
To get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia Book 1, complete with over 20 hours of audio, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.